Hello, venturers, and gather around for the thrilling conclusion of episode 27. What you are about to hear is the second and final part of episode 27, so if you haven't already listened to part 1, turn back now! You have been warned! For those of you that are in the right place, welcome, welcome! Thank you so much for being here! Thank you, as always, to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song. Thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. And thank you to our most gracious and beautiful supporters of all, those of you who donate to us on Patreon. Before I set you loose on the action, I want to remind you that there are so very many ways to get involved in the Venture Maidens online community. We have accounts across social media on places like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Hive, Patreon, Twitch, YouTube, and Discord. So if you are ever curious what's new, hop into one of those forums and get in touch. You can find all our links to all of our platforms on our website, venturemaidens.com. All right, kids, so here's the scoop. We left you last time in the middle of a fight with the Shadow Lady, who was revealed to be a twisted piece of the fractured Archfey, Penny Dreadful. So far, our crew has been staying in the game, but between the odd electric machines, psychic hauntings, and their new companions fading fast, things are starting to look grim for our heroes. But don't take my word for it. Let's dive back into the story right now.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Carefree spring is fading fast. Its last chapter almost passed. Hard decisions will be made, as the piper must be paid. Repent for your wrongs, as we head into favor, episode 27, Swan Song, part 2.
So for the last round here, Gwen and Penny are continuing to read, and luckily they have not been interrupted. You all have been very effectively distracting the Shadow Lady between your startling propositions and your just general bringing the pain. So that is good. The wisp in front of them is gone. You do see that they continue to look worse and worse as they are saying this ritual. Right, like the blue is very apparent now in their face. Their lips have turned blue. And you hear like a cough that like racks out, like a racking, one of those really gross wet coughs comes from Penny. There's the splattering sound as just like scarlet hits the floor as she seems to be coughing up blood.
So that we have survived now two rounds. We are back up at the top of round three. So we are starting off with a lair action once again. So here is what I'm going to do, because Rook has been hitting the lady pretty hard. She's got some significant chunks and also Lou. There is a big blue flash that travels through the room, and all of you, I think, for a moment are forced to like squint your eyes and not look directly at it. And as your vision clears, you realize that one of the wisps is gone. So the one that was sitting on Rook has disappeared. And you see like the electricity that formed its body is like crackling now over the skin of this woman as you see her like flesh start to knit itself back together as this electricity seems to invigorate and heal. But one of the wisps is gone, so now there is just one sitting by you, Lou. The other two have been felled. So that was the lair action. So Lou, it is your turn to respond. So now you have a wisp on your right and a much, I mean, I wouldn't say good-looking lady in front of you, but she's there, more whole than she was before.
I'm going to go ahead and real quick with my bonus action, I'm going to take my healing potion. 6-7 points.
Nice. You feel a little bit better.
And then I'm going to try to remove that healing that was just done. And I'm going to go back in with my sonic blade and give her a stab.
Oh, a stab.
Okay, that's going to be a 15 to hit.
15 will hit.
Oh, damn.
She doesn't appear to be wearing any kind of armor or anything, so it's actually been relatively easy to hit her.
So, 17, 21 points of thunder damage.
Ooh, ow. Ow. Yeah, so you absolutely blow through that healing that she just got with a big ol' ouchie. It's so loud by you.
Yeah, I have no chill.
Zero chill.
Yeah, she hurt me real bad, and I am just fighting to stay alive on behalf of all of the homies.
Yeah. Tight. Yeah, cool. All right, so she does not like that, and it is her turn now. So she is going to raise both of her hands. So, like, palms out, one towards Rook and one towards you, Lou. And you see, like, electricity starts to crackle on her gloved fingers. And she says,
"It's pointless for you to have come here. You will not take the book. I will not let it leave. I will not let it hurt more people. It will die with me."
And then, like lightning shooting from both of her palms towards each of you. She does some Sith Lord bullshit.
This is exactly what I was thinking.
She's doing fucking force lightning. So a 15 to hit Rook.
And she would have disadvantage at any rate, but...
Rook throws herself then out of the way. For Lou, that'll be a dirty 20.
Bye, guys.
25 lightning damage. And as this, like, flash moves over you and just, like, your body is rocked with this light, you are blinded until the end of your next turn by this big old blast. Rook totally throws herself out of the way and it's fine.
Okay, I'm going to uncanny dodge that so that I can survive.
So you're knocked on your ass on the ground. No, you're not prone, but it hurt. It hurt so much. Your eyeballs felt like they were going to burst out into jelly with, like, all that electric voltage just moving through you. Neat. Delight. Rook! And then, Aoife, you'll be on deck because the wisp was exploded.
Yeah. So Rook, having deftly dodged out of the way of this lightning blast, is seeking to give the Lady of Shadows a bit of her own medicine as she cocks two more bolts ready to fire.
Pew pew!
Ooh, that's a 27 to hit.
God, Rook does so much better when Sage rolls.
And as some of her arrows have absorbed some of the electricity that she had taken from one of the orbs that, you know, zaps out and...
We'll say the lightning will do nothing against this lady.
Okay. 12 damage.
Yeah, you see the lightning kind of crackles uselessly and, like, goes into her body almost like it's made of rubber.
Mm-hmm.
It just disperses.
Interesting. All right, so she'll take her second attack and damn it. No, that's only going to be a 13 to hit.
A 13 is the AC.
Oh, snap. That is 5 additional damage.
So two shots fired off in rapid succession make contact with this Lady of Shadow, who's looking kind of fucked up. Honestly, after all that bullshit. Oh boy. All right, anything else for Rook before we move to Aoife?
Now that will be her turn. And on Aoife's turn, go ahead and give Rook a Bardic Inspiration. And then we're going to throw a level 3 Cure Wounds on dear Lou here. So our dear sweet...
Okay, so you're going to run up the 20 feet?
Yes.
Okay. The other wisp is going to get an attack of opportunity if you do so.
That's fine.
Zip! Well, only a 10 to hit you, so I don't think it was expecting that from you.
This tiny little satyr baby going to run up here? I don't think so.
No.
And as Aoife runs up to Lou and you see these ephemeral threads begin to weave back together, you're zapped in searing flesh, you'll heal back 19.
Ooh!
Holy shit.
That's nice! Ooh, it's nice to have a healer. Ooh!
We're doing our best! And that is Aoife's turn.
Okay, Tony, we come back to you. You're no longer feared. You are not affected by what you saw before you killed the will-o-wisp that was by you. So now you are just, there's these two women behind you who are looking miserable as they're pushing through this ritual, literally coughing blood, like turning blue just behind you. And then everyone else is in a big tangle in the center of the room.
I really don't know. I don't know if I should leave their side and try and help take this thing down as fast as possible and just make my way back. Let's engage our little vampire spirit and try and do it real fast. We'll zoom in and out as best we can.
Cool. Okay. I like this. So you want to use that speed to basically get over to the lady, make an attack, and then come back here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So basically like giving yourself a free dash,
mm-hmm.
dashy action. I like it. What does it look like? Yeah, do you turn into mist like a vampire? Do you just run really fast? Do you like, what's your vibe?
I think it's just a fast run. She like zips out of existence for a second, appears right around the shadow lady, and suddenly her fangs are out. She looks a little bit angrier. The ears are pointier. The fingers, the claws are coming out. Everything's a little bit sharper. And we're going to go for an attack.
Cool. I dig it. So yeah, your tracker is now up at 2. So we've got 2 for Tony, 2 for Lou, and 3 for Aoife.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to use our claws and fangs. This is going to be like no weapons. I don't remember what we decided would be our damage die for that.
It was a d10 for the fangs.
I'd give you a d8 for your claws.
I guess it should just be proficiency then. That's 17?
17 will hit.
All right.
Her flesh is nice and corporeal. And she does not have resistances to non-magical damage.
Woohoo! We're going for the throat.
Yeah, I mean, Lou, your attacks have been doing full body.
5 damage.
Okay. Yeah, so you like dig into her and she is cold and feels dead, but not quite. It's very odd. She's not her body, and you can feel it because, right, like as you dig into her, like, and you're hypersensitive to the heart, right, in this state, and it's there, but it's so faint and strange. So this thing is alive in front of you, but almost like in stasis. It confuses your predator senses, for sure.
Definitely taste fractured. Well, let's take one more attack. Our final attack. Ooh, well, that was a natural one. Let's add our... my bardic inspiration won't help there, would it?
No, it's a natural one. So I think as you go and you like go in and dig, is it this with your claws or your fangs?
This probably would be with my claws since I had a nasty taste with the fangs the first time.
Yeah. So you reach in and like, you know, with the first one, you like grab a bunch of viscera and pull it out and you're feeling confident and you like go to smash back in. And despite the fact that you have this like lightning speed, right, you're here, her wrist comes up, her hand comes up just as fast as your own. And she like kind of grabs it like just as you were like about to like delve into her flesh. And she looks at you. She turns these like black eyes that seem to be these just like spiraling pools of just darkness, and she says,
"Careful. Unleashing the monster is exactly what got me here. Beware. It's closer than you think."
I need you to make a charisma saving throw for me, or check off another one of your monster bits as something in you stirs at this lady's voice. One predator to another, challenging you.
14
is not going to do it. So as like something about her, it gets to you. It awakens whatever that beast is. And maybe it's that way, like when an alpha dog like gets in, like trapped in a space with another alpha, like that sudden flash of like fear and recognition comes over you. What is it? What is it exactly that awakens like another level of the monster in you?
Someone trying to compare themselves to me and trying to tell me what I can't do. saying that they've been there, done that.
Right? Yeah. She was so aggressive about it, right? Where she's like, oh, I know better. Like, how fucking dare she?
I'm like, no, I'm in control. I'm the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know what I can handle.
You are so much more powerful than her. Like, how dare she? She's like a shadow person with this, what the fuck? I think there's a physical change, too, that we see from Tony. Well, how do you, as you now are at three of your three boxes with that, so what do you look like?
Her fangs get bigger, first of all. Looks like all of her teeth are now a little bit sharp and fang-like, somewhat. The like, collagen in her skin goes away. She becomes a little bit more leathery and grayer.
Yeah, I think a little more beast-like.
Yeah.
Something, yeah, rubbery about your skin and almost a little like bat-like. Very cool. So with that hike, that spike, she is challenging you and she thinks she's fucking better than you. Do you still want to use your movement to go back and guard those two girls, or do you want to stand toe-to-toe with her?
No, I want to action surge, and I'm going to take another action and try and attack her one more time with my fangs, my now engorged fangs.
Engorged! Powerful word.
Oh, 15? Did that work last time?
Hell yeah, well.
That is 7 damage.
Okay, yeah, so you, like, bite into her neck, and she... as you feel like a very slow like chug of arterial spray, it's like, yeah, again, like half the speed of like a normal human body should feel, but you do feel it's blood and it's mortal blood racing across your tongue. There's something wrong and you realize she's laughing. She's fucking laughing at you. Well, you were, like, destroying her neck. And it's just the manic, insane laugh of somebody who just knows. It's one of your attacks. You do have 2 attacks. Yeah. With your action surge, you get your full attack.
Oh, I can use my extra attack on an action surge? Then yes. Then yes, please. That's going to be a 17 to hit.
Yes, a 17 will hit.
And then that's, yes, another 7 damage.
Ooh, yeah. She's laughing and coughing blood and just going down. You can feel her body getting lighter as you are, like, draining the fluids from her. And she can't have a lot left in her, but she hasn't changed. And against your ear, she's whispering. She's like, it feels so good, doesn't it? The darkness. It feels so good.
She's not wrong. Tony is not responding because she's like, yeah, it does.
Yeah, and you're also drinking this person dry. Shit, you both would see that, Yifunlu. You're right the fuck there. And I think even Rook, like, there's like a growling sound that comes out of Rook. Like, bite that doesn't seem to enjoy anything that's happening. Her big puffy hair gets so much, like, puffier as it stands on end. Woo! All right. Love that. That it for you, Tony?
So now am I able to... I think I can speed back, right? As my last thing? Or would that check off? Would that be another monster move?
It is up to you. You use the point to... So you get to do whatever you want. So if you think reasonably in this situation, hackles raised, that Vampire Tony would want to retreat from her prey, you certainly can.
That was the goal initially, but she has forced me to check another box. Yes, she made me check another box. I'm feeling very monstrous. I guess I'll stay put.
And she's just fucking goading you on.
But that means, am I closer to Aoife and Lou now? Will they benefit?
Yeah. So you all are right there, like in that knot kind of surrounding her right now.
Okay, I'll take a defensive stance then at least.
Okay, so you, like, retract your fangs from her neck and, you know, remember you have a sword and, like, take a defensive stance. But, ugh, yeah, it's hard to shake that red haze. And she's just, the way she's looking at you is just fucking infuriating. Aoife, you're a student of character. Why don't you go ahead and make me an insight check as you observe this whole fucking bizarre interaction?
Interesting. Okay. That is a 21.
This woman is pushing, Tony. It's intentional. It is absolutely intentional. And you get this flash of insight. This woman wants to die. She does. And she is doing everything in her power to push.
Drag Tony down with her.
Yeah, as the, like, with whatever darkness she's going, she's for it. She knows this is the end, and she's going to take someone with her.
Okay. We'll save a response for Tony on Eva's turn.
That is Tony's turn, so that last wisp, who is still there, is going to do a zeppy at Lou. You've been its target. You've been its snack.
Just looking for the juiciest one, and here I am.
Oh, 20 again. God, these wisps are rolling fucking incredible. So, that'll be 9 points of damage. So this thing, still on your butt, zapping you. This little lightning poke. And then you all are now very far away from Gwen and Penny. So as we come to their turn, and they're kind of obscured too behind that like large pylon in the center of the room where you all are now, like stacked in this ring around her. You hear a scream come from the pair, and you're not sure which of them, but the flow of Latin that has been getting slowly weaker and weaker suddenly stops, and you hear, "Oh my God! Oh God!" like come from the two of them. And it doesn't start again. And then we are back up to the top. So all of you are here, standing around, and there is the shimmering that happens once again as the glass does something very similar to what Aoife and Tony experienced before, as it shimmers strangely, and you all begin to see a vision. And it's the Shadow Lady, but as herself, as Penny, you can see her. She's normal. And this girl, again, Gwen, this girl, you just keep seeing. And they're sitting at like a dinner table together across from each other. And it looks normal. It looks like a normal family dinner. And you hear snippets of this conversation as Penny says, "I have to. It's not safe for me to stay as I am. You can't be here with what I am. So I'm going to find a way. In fact, I have. I found a way to change." And you see that Gwen is not having any of this. She's shaking her head no, and like Penny reaches out a hand and like grabs her across the table, and you feel that pain of like, it's too hard. Like the way she grabs you is too hard. It's strange. She's looking at you with some strange expression. She says, "I'm going to change. It's going to be different. This is the only way. This is the only way. And I need you all to make wisdom saving throws for me."
I use my bardic inspiration.
You know what? Me too.
This is going to be Rook 2. Oh, Rook can't be frightened by this. So Rook is good.
Yeah, a 17.
16?
Aoife also got a 16.
That is a success. All right, cool. So none of you are drawn into this. This image, this, like, I have to change. I have to change. And again, it moves over you. And that feeling as you all are cast again in that role of Gwen, and you're like, no, stop. Why are you doing this? Stop. But it ends. It ends. It fades away. All right, yeah, so that lair action moves over you all, and you all are immune. You've seen so much. This one wasn't going to get you. Lou, we now come to you.
So Lou is utterly terrified at this point. She's been blinded and she's heard that scream. And she knows now that Aoife is up in the thick of it as she felt that healing magic. So I think as an act of desperation, she's going to check off another box. And before she'd been too embarrassed to say anything to these other spirits that had been watching them after she'd been kind of teased for it. But with this added level of danger, I think that she just calls out to them and is like, "I can't let anybody else get hurt. I need you to restrain this woman. I can't see. I don't know what else to do." And would like to call them to raise up through the floor and grab onto her with these poltergeist hands keeping her steady.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, so you don't see it because you are blinded, but you feel them. As soon as you call for them, you tap into that undercurrent of pain and rage that has been just rampant through this place, and you know they're there. Hundreds of them are there by you, and you sense fear and doubt. What do you say to push them through that? They're so afraid of this lady. How do you push them?
Lou, just like in this very level-headed, calm tone that her mother has always used with her when she's just been in just an inconsolable state before, just says, I know that it's hard. I know that it's scary. But you just have to give this one last push. And we'll be in this together. And we can help each other. Just try.
Yeah. And your words echo and into that vacuum, that void of sorrow. And you worry for a moment that nothing is going to happen. But then they start to move. And you feel them. It's like just a trickle at first, and then a wave of these souls that have been trapped here in this world, trapped alongside Penny, forced to play these like roles in this story, and they're so angry and so tired. Too tired and too ready for it to be done, to be afraid anymore. And at your stirring, they crash over in a wave, and none of you can see this, but they surround this woman, the shadow lady, and they hold her taut. And then Tony and Aoife, you can see her arms like spread out by her as if somebody is holding like her left and her right and kind of like forcing her down like into a kneeling position as just like some great invisible weight has come over her. And her eyes are not what you would expect in this. They're flat and they're cold, and her expression is kind of serene. And she nods just a little bit to you, Tony, specifically. And she kind of moves her chin to the side, like exposing the other side of her neck. Do you want to take the killing blow?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please. Her sword is ready. She's really just presenting it.
She is. And she cannot seem to move. Whatever this force is, you don't understand it, but she cannot move. And she seems to know this is the end. And she's looking at you, predator to predator.
Yeah. All right. Sword it is. We're gonna drive it straight through her chest.
And you do, and there's the, like, you know, the gasp of someone, like, as their whole body is racked with that moment of pain. And, like, the slow creep, again, of, like, sluggish blood that isn't quite a full life. Like, stains, you know, the black clothing she's wearing and drips out onto the ground. And she... Her body starts to shake, and she looks up at you, and she mouths something at you. There's like this bubble of blood that comes up, and you can have to like lean in a little. And she says,
"I won. I won. You won't forget me."
And, like, this dribble just of more of this blood, like, pours down her chin, and she falls forward. And there is a flash of lightning from up above once again, and the pylons go suddenly very, very dark as, like, there's zip, zoom, like, these powering down sounds. Electricity stops flowing through them all, and you realize it's very quiet. There's no chanting, there's no screaming, there's nothing coming from those other two. That wisp that was beside you, Lou, is gone. And there's just this, like, body that's fallen across your sword, Tony.
Tony's going to carefully put her arm around the body and, like, lay it down as she pulls her sword out.
It seems weak. As, like, as you touch this woman, you realize, like, how fragile, like, how skin and bone she must be under, like, all these thick layers of clothing she was wearing. It's, like, emaciated and barely hanging on.
Mm-hmm.
Probably occurs to you, like, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like a fair fight. As you lay her down, she made you feel so much. There's just a feeling that something is wrong.
I wanted to say, before, like, she, like, gives her final breath or anything, I want to see if I can get an answer out of her. Why did you want this? Why is death better than reuniting with all your former selves?
Yeah, you have her on the floor, you've pulled out the sword. She kind of coughs again, like this, like, rivet of scarlet comes out of her mouth, and she says,
it was the only way. You understand, when you've been what we are, you can never go back. When you know what you're capable of, you can never go back. Take me to them. I can feel them. Take me to them.
Tony looks back at the other two. What do they look like?
Oh, yeah. This is your first time kind of looking over at them. They are laying on the floor, collapsed.
She'll carry the dying shadow lady over to the other two and lay her down next to them.
And that roll of thunder, like, peals up from above, and there's a moment of dark. And those three bodies on the floor in that light become one. And you see Penny, the same one from your dreams. The one who, if she weren't covered in blood and in this dark place, would look beautiful and healthy and normal. And she's, like, got this dull expression on her face as she's looking around. And she starts looking, kind of raising a hand, like, gently out, and, like, making a beckoning gesture to you all.
Over, lean in.
Mm-hmm. Slide on over.
She says, you did it. You brought an end to the story. I owe you a favor, but name it quickly. I feel it coming. Finally.
Tony, you need that codex.
We need to take the codex out of here. And the three of us must return.
Hear me out.
Wait.
Liz
is, like, sobbing and just, like, looks over horrified.
Hold on.
What if we have seen what this book has done to someone? What if we ask her to take on the debt that you owe her, Tony, and then we would no longer be beholden to bring in the book?
Pass that debt on.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how that works.
Lou's just, like, wiping tears off her cheeks, and she's like, is that even a thing? What? I mean,
I would say that's very interesting, and I think how that would work, I think, yeah, as a favor, you could ask somebody to take on another favor, but it would be one, because it's one big favor, which would mean Tony would still owe a second one.
Oh, Tony still owes two, and we're just covering for one right now with the book. I see.
Exactly. So I think I really like that. I think that's super clever, but I think it could only get one, and you know she would just turn right the fuck back around and be like, oh.
I mean, it's a good point, because, like, a part of me thought, like, what if she destroys the codex? And we're like, sorry, we couldn't get it to you. Like, it doesn't exist anymore. Like,
I don't think she's gonna give a fuck. I think you're just gonna end up dead.
Well, I guess I'm just asking for a ride out of here then, with the codex.
The book. Are you sure nothing good will
come from it.
I believe you, but there are much higher powers that are commanding me to do this.
She like kind of nods, and you know, she sees her head lolls a bit, and she raises like a hand up towards you just to like take your hand.
I give it to her.
She holds it, and it's very weak in her grip, and she just says, "Just promise me if you take the book, the ones you love, hold them close, and tell them while you still, Gwen." And she reaches up to your face and like touches it, like pats it on the cheek. She's like, "Gwen, I love you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And she slips away. And as Penny dies, the world begins to crumble. Because without the Archfey, the dwelling doesn't last. So this like weird castle room that you're in and everything, you hear the shattering of like glass and stone as it all begins to just fall to pieces. And around you, it goes black and it's confusing and dark, and a lot of different feelings move over you. And then you're awake again, and it's still dark wherever you land, but there's like mud under your hands and the smell of outside, and all of you feel different. Like something in your bodies has changed, like something has been removed, like that weird monstrous thing is gone from within you, and you're in the mud of a little center square with like this cute little wishing well in the center. And it takes you a minute to realize, like, you're back in Storyville. That little changeling town. The mud fresh from all of the rain that is no longer pouring down, but must have just stopped. And Tony, as you land and you get, like, the lay of the land, you hear, like, a splattering sound as something heavy lands by you in the mud. And you see a book. Very thick book bound in very simple black leather with no title, no markings on it, but is laying there in the mud beside you. And as you all kind of get your bearings and sit up, you realize there are other people there with you, just like about 100 or so people kind of thrown out like in this town square, and they're all like sitting up looking at each other, looking around, confused as hell. What the hell is going on?
What the fuck?
Hello, everybody. Can we have some space?
Yeah, you have some space if you're, all of you. I think it's almost like all of these people just woke up, right, from a dream. And you all are, so yeah, you absolutely all have a moment in the confusion if you want to chat real quick right now.
Aoife says, "Penny sends her regards."
You say that out, and people are like, you know, gripping their heads and they're like, "Penny, where? What?" As these people thrown out of this dwelling that just collapsed, they've been there for 100 years, maybe more, now are back. And you start to see, like, as all of you have landed there, obviously, like, changelings from the village start to like come out of their houses and stuff, and it becomes very like weird scene as people are shifting through. And yeah, so do you all want to say anything to each other before these changelings, clearly, because people are going to recognize you and be like, "What the fuck happened?" walk up to you.
I say we get the fuck out of here sooner rather than later. I don't want to spend any time trying to get these people back on their feet, personally.
Lou is just still sitting in the mud, looking a fucking mess, and she's like, "But there's, I mean, I still have so many fucking questions about this. Where's her daughter? She wasn't, maybe they can answer. You're just gonna," and she just seems like really like disoriented and flustered.
"I don't think they're gonna know.
At the very least, I need to collect all the letters that they've all written for me to deliver. But I say we head off sooner than later."
You do still have rented rooms. I mean, if it is that, it doesn't look like too much has changed, so maybe you could hide there for a bit or something. But yeah, this is going to be a big old fucking mess. There's like 100 people now here in a town of like 100 people, so... And there's going to be a lot of questions.
I think Tony's just going to play dumb like everyone else in this crowd. Like, whoa, what happened? What a crazy dream.
Wild, man.
I gotta take a nap. I'll see you guys later. And like, you know, goes to the inn and like tries to play it cool. I don't have this book on me or nothing. And goes and hides.
Okay. Yeah, so you want to like make your way creep back to the inn to go hide and get the letters and then get out of town as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You get up quickly and take advantage of the situation where everybody's like, what? And nobody's like recognized you or put it together. You see a couple like changelings that you recognize from before, but like they just give you a passing glance. It's like clearly the emergency of all of these people is more important. So you just turn corners through the streets and make your way back to the Pendragon Inn. As you turn that final corner, there is a figure that is kind of heading towards you. And this person is like the only one who hasn't been like running directly towards this scene so far, wearing this like deep black kind of hood. And they run towards you all. And as you're like, you know, like, oh, avoiding them, going in the door, you hear a familiar voice. I'm sorry. Could you just answer one thing for me?
Sure. I think we have 1 second.
Does this mean she's dead? Is Penny dead? Everyone is back. Does that mean she's dead?
It does.
She drops the hood. And you can see her for the first time. This girl with long black hair and these like weird kind of white patches of feathers on her skin. You see the cloak is like shaped over something bulky, like wings or something from her back. She looks at you and says, you know, I tried. She wouldn't let me stay. And I couldn't get back. She wouldn't let me back in.
Gwen, you must be Gwen, right? Where did you go? Why did she think you were dead?
She thought I was dead? She cast me out. I had to go. I couldn't get back to her. And I've waited all this time. And
I believe she made herself believe that you were dead. But either way, she was mourning your loss. For she did a lot in the name of her love for you. And I don't think you'd be served to know the extent of it. But she rests now. Peaceful and whole.
I loved her just the way she was, you know. Just the way she was.
We saw that when we were there, even if she didn't.
Thank you for letting me know. I won't bug you anymore.
It's not a bother. We do need to be heading out soon, but if you need anything while we're still here for a short time, we'll be at the inn.
Thanks.
I'm sure that there are a lot of other people in this town who would love to see you.
I'll do that. Okay.
She waves a hand and quickly disappears, clearly heading off somewhere with her answers. So she was the only person who bothered you. You all can make your way back into step into the Pendragon, which is, like, empty at this point. There is no one else inside. And you can see that there is, like, a couple of, like, a big collection box that seems to have been put on the bar that is just stuffed full of, like, different letters and different script and handwriting. Amazing. And stuff. So clearly people have been compiling these letters for you here. So if you want, you can absolutely just take these and take the money and run.
Oh, yeah.
Because even Oslo is probably out in the streets, you know, dealing with, like, how are we going to feed and house and, like, care for all of these people that just showed up.
Let's do it. Let's get back to Chicken Hut.
Yeah. So, in terms of options,
You do not have a lot of time, I will say. You're probably within like 24 hours or so of when you need to be back to Hecate. So you do have a fairy ring that you could use to break and like teleport directly to her and then back. Or you could probably take the chicken hut and be, you know, a couple hours.
I think we should probably save the ring since we have another favor we may need to turn in at some point.
And if we have 24 hours still, we can still get in the sleep and still head over there.
Yeah, but Fairy Mommy likes us. She'll probably give us another ring.
I don't want her to give us another favor.
It won't be a favor. This was a freebie. She gave you the fairy ring as a freebie.
Yeah, that one was.
Yeah.
But the next one, who fucking knows? And I don't want to be a
How much time do we got to get back? We had a time limit. Where are we at?
Yeah, you only have like 24 hours or so.
But she said that the chicken hut would take a few hours, so we have plenty of time to get back with chicken hut.
Though you might have to deal with some bullshit on the island. True, because the fairy ring will take you right the fuck there. Last time you had to go the long way, and you met a cool statue.
Whatever. We can use the fairy ring, but we should just be really cautious about accepting another. We need to make it very plain that it would not be a favor on her behalf if she were to give it to us.
I think with you, Lou, we'll be fine.
Thank you.
So?
Seems we're using the ring.
So you all circle up, and like you saw Rook do back in episode 2 or 3? You know, you take the ring, and as you snap it, you instantly find yourself in that familiar place, the Glass Garden. This, like, abandoned tea party around this glass dome in the center. And you appear directly outside of the dome, and you can hear the sounds of laughter and music coming from inside.
After you, Tony.
Don't mind if I do. Struts on in, holding the book.
Yeah. So you step on in. And yeah, there's like a little casual soiree that seems to be happening here as you see the three sisters, you know, their dusty rose skin, talking with a variety of strange beings that you haven't really seen before. But they're all clearly like fae, you know, these amalgamation of like trees and people and beasts. And you see this like one fox-headed gentleman in like a very dapper hat and like cape talking to one of the sisters who turns as you step in. As she looks at you, makes eye contact, you know it's Hecate. She kind of glides over, draped in a see-through veil of like midnight blue. And she says, oh, you actually did it in the time limit. That's a mixed bag of happy and sad, isn't it? Well, give it here. That's it, right?
One big favor off the books?
Yes. Only one left for now.
After giving, like, a big look of, like, all right, what the fuck does that mean to the other two? She, like, drops the book into Hecate's hands.
Delightful. And she looks at it. She just gives it a glance. Kind of looks at someone else in the room who, like, runs over. You see it's, like, kind of a hulking, like, troll-like individual. And she says, put this with my things. Well, you can go. We're very busy.
All right.
Little shoot gesture.
Toodaloo, motherfucker. Lou just immediately turns around and is like, out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, as you're waiting, she's like, is there something else? She looks at you, Tony.
No. I'm glad this is over. And I'll walk away.
After that very short and like curt ejection, and you just handed off this book that just destroyed lives, you're kicked out of this little party, and you're back outside, and you can use the power of the ring to beam back exactly to where you were. The whole thing's over in like a minute, and the book is gone.
Sounds appealing to me. Ring power?
Let's get out of here. I've never been around anyone who makes me feel like nothing more than her.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So you beam back to where you were, and Rook hasn't said anything this whole time, but she looks deeply troubled. But she's playing it close to the vest. So you get back, and she says, "All right, are we going back to Coven, or what?"
"It's up to you all. I don't think that we have any other business here if we are not wanting to deal with the all of that." And she, like, looks back at the town.
"I don't even know how to start with all of that. So, yeah, my vote is, get the hell out of here. Especially, I mean, if there's all these changelings here alone now without an archfey protecting them, I don't think we should stick around long."
"There's nothing we can do for all of them. It just seems like, I don't know. I feel dirty giving that woman that book, and I feel dirtier leaving these people here and not trying to do anything when they're just bait for some asshole to come destroy."
Rook looks at you and kind of like, she's like shrugging, like, "We did a job and it's done. I don't..."
"Yeah, those people have been surviving this long on their own so far. I think they'll be okay."
"I mean, there's nothing else we can do, no matter how we feel, right?"
"I guess. Go leave them all behind. Job done, right?" And Lou turns around and starts walking towards the chicken hut.
"Wow, okay, Lou, you can stay if you'd like to stay."
She bites her lip and is like, "You know, maybe I should, because maybe they would appreciate me more than you and Rook do."
"It's gonna always be this way. This is how fae are with mortals, right? They don't care. And if you care too much, you're just gonna get your heart broken. So you can make it personal if you fucking want to, Lou, but you're never gonna last if you do. It sucks. They all suck. That's why we kill them. They're all bad, but we are going to deal with the worst. And we lost today, but you know what? We might do better tomorrow. So you can pout and be a baby if you want, but I need a fucking drink, and I'm going to go do that. So whatever. I'm not here to fucking make friends."
"And we already know we're not in an easy position. Oh, me personally still owing favors, so... if that's starting to get to you, then maybe it is best you don't come with us."
"Okay, then I won't."
"Fine, let's see how long you make it as a mortal in this fucking place. Because it's real fucked up, Lou. It's real fucked up here. So fine, you don't want to get the fuck out of here. You want to stay here? You want to become one of them? Fine. That's fucking fine. Throw away your mortality. Throw away all that good shit. That's fine. Great."
"Well, I'll tell you what, Rook. At least I won't end up like you. Fucking cold and closed off because somebody hurt you. I'm gonna be better than that, okay? If this is my life now, then I'll be happy to spend it with these good people who haven't done anything other than be fucked over. That's the kind of people that I want to protect. That's how I was raised."
"Yeah, because the rest of us are doing so fucking well. No one else here has been fucked over by the Fae, right? You're the only one who fucking gets it." "Yeah, for sure. I understand."
"I don't give a fuck about the Fae. I went ahead and I did this thing that didn't sit right with me because I wanted to help you guys, because we're all supposed to be friends. We're all supposed to be a team. We're working together. We started in this horrible situation because of some motherfucker Whistler. Okay, great. So I did that, and I was with you, and I helped you against my better judgment. And I sat there, and I listened to all of your guys' opinions on, oh, well, this is just what we have to do because this is our job. Well, it's not right, and I don't want to keep doing that. And if that's what you guys want to do, I don't want to keep traveling with you."
"Fine. Well, I think I'm done here. Tony, Aoife, you coming?"
Tony's looking at Aoife. See how she feels.
Oh my god, Aoife's face, it's like your parents just said, we're getting a divorce, and...
We're getting a divorce, and it's your fault. No.
Yeah. And we never should have had kids, because the reason... And she looks so unbelievably torn, and she's looking as Lou and as Rooker, you know, going with their back and forth, and Aoife generally, like, starts to slide over towards Lou's side. You know, she's clutching this huge, like, letter box in her arms that's, like, just right underneath her eyes. And all these letters are sticking out from the edges of all these hand-scrawled notes from all these people who are just behind the walls and trying to rebuild their lives with all these new people who've suddenly been dropped on them. She looks back towards Storyville, and she looks over at each and every one of you. And she says, look, we're all tired. We've all just been through so much. We've been changed. We've seen the worst sides of each other. We just killed a woman who may have wanted an end, but you're right. It's still not right. Everything we've done for this book that's going to be used for God's know what. But what got us through that is that we were together. We fought together. We worked together. And Lou, you're right. I'm with you. If we don't have something that guides us, some moral compass, some idea of doing something for, you know, just beyond making our means, then what's the point of doing anything if you don't stand for nothing? She just looks so tired and so defeated and so, so small. She slumps her shoulders. She wipes some tears from underneath her eyes. She says, Lou, if you really want to stay, then I'll stay with you. But I say we make big decisions like this after we've had a chance to regroup. Because there's no point in making hectic, huge decision now while we're all frazzled.
Rook looks away, not meeting anybody's gaze when you say that.
Because, you know, I want to go home too. I want to see my family again.
I will come back with you guys temporarily to figure out arrangements. But I'm not letting this go. And Aoife, I don't want you to stay here with me. And it's not because I don't want you around, but you're so young and you have so much ahead of you and you shouldn't get stuck here. So we'll go back for now and I will figure out what I'm going to do. But you need to go home.
Fine, let's just get some fucking sleep. And Rourke starts walking off towards the hut.
Aoife will kind of wait and just walk in step with Lou. And we'll look at Tony kind of bashfully.
Tony will wink at you and give you like a soft smile. And we'll walk behind everyone.
So with nerves frayed and a lot has just happened, you all make your way back to the hut, at least to sleep for now, and see where the hell you go from here in the morning. But before the episode ends proper, we've got to do a dream. So it's a long night, I think. You all managed to make it back to your beds, and some of you are probably tortured by whatever happened and what you've seen experienced, but eventually you find sleep. It's just, it's been so much. You're so exhausted. Sleep takes you eventually. And Aoife, it isn't long before, you know, your head hits the pillow that you find yourself awake. You know it's a dream. It's happened to you so many times now. You know it's a dream. You're sitting in the Pendragon Inn, where you just were, But all the lights are, you know, all the lanterns are lit. And Oslo, you see him behind the bar, and it's full. There are customers. Everyone seems happy. Like, they're having a good time. Like, the troubles have finally passed, is the feeling you get as you're sitting there with a mug of honeyed mead that's getting low. And you hear, like, the jingle of a bell, and your attention is pulled up as you see somebody familiar walk into the room. This dragon-headed figure wearing this, like, very, you know, regal-looking robe, who kind of looks around and, like, spots you and waves from across the bar and gives you a symbol, like, do you need another drink? Like, from across.
And she lifts her cup and she beckons over with a wave.
Yeah, so he goes up to Oslo and says two, and Oslo, like, you know, nods in greeting, and he comes in and sits down across from you, you know, on the wooden, the little booths. And he looks at you for a moment, and it's weird, because, you know, this is your first, like, good time, like, really just seeing him in a casual setting, and something about him feels different. It feels a little bit more real, if that makes any sense. It's like every time you've seen him, it's gotten realer and realer. And he says, so you weren't able to save her, huh?
And looking down at the bottom of her cup that's empty, she stares deeply into the end of it. And she shakes her head a bit, and she looks back up at him. And she says, no, we couldn't save her. But I'll always save her memory. And I know she'll be saved in the minds of Gwen and all the others that she's touched over the course of her life. And that itself is a bit of saving. Tell me.
Oh, your thought is interrupted as, like, Oslo comes and pours, you know, both of your mugs up. And he's like, oh, thanks. I'm sorry, what?
What should I call you? You're from the sleeping court, right?
He smiles. What would you like to call me? I've never had a name.
She looks so surprised and taken aback, and she's like, has no idea how to answer. And she's trying to rifle through her mind to try and think of something good, something worthy of this very regal and very majestic and interesting and unique person in front of her. And she says, and she kind of laughs a little bit, and she says, oh, like the cats. That's why they're powerful, right? Because they don't have names. And she kind of giggles to herself, and she says, how about Felix?
I like it. Felix. And he thinks about it and, like, takes a long, like, drink from the mead cup. It wasn't your fault, you know. She was just another casualty. This war. The battle to exist.
It's a tragedy that so many are claimed. That we all do such desperate things and hurt each other. When really, we've no right to. But why are you here? Why are you in my dreams? I dare to think there's anything about me that's special.
He smiles, like, with a secret smile, and seems to, like, nod. As in, like, a gesture of you can't possibly understand. And he says, I think that if only we could connect and really hear each other, maybe then we wouldn't have to do this alone. It's a terrible burden, he says. He, like, kind of leans in and is whispering to you. From the moment we're born, we're part of a fight that we never asked for. I suppose who I am, what I am, is a bridge. He kind of shrugs, like, that's what I've got. And
Aoife takes a long and pensive sip from her mug and slurps it down, and she says, and she kind of gives a tap onto the bar, and you hear a clink of a metal ring that sounds, and she says, "Remember the name, right?" She kind of smiles and looks at him.
Names are important. For what it's worth, I will watch over them. You can tell your friend that. This place kind of like indicates the inn around you. It's the least I can do for her.
She looks comforted by that. She looks relieved.
Well, I have to be going, but steel yourself, young dreamer. Both your world and mine are about to change. And even I don't know which way the wind is going to blow. And he makes a gesture as if he would have a hat, like that kind of hand to forehead to chest, and like sort of bows. And he reaches into his pocket and pulls out some gold coins. You know, this isn't a fae thing, but this is part of your dream, right? It's making sense as he puts down the gold for a tip.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of waves to you and disappears. And with that, we are going to end our episode, and we are ending arc one. We are ending the spring arc of our favor campaign. We have done it. Oh, man. How are we all doing, kids?
Good. Spicy, but terrible. Good.
I like it. I love that. I love this, like, finale drama vibes. I don't know how we're going to untangle it, but I'm really excited to figure it out. It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, that was a slingshot. That was a slingshot of feelings.
I loved seeing your face the whole time, Sage. You're like, oh shit.
Oh shit. We don't quite have the power of friendship to get us through everything. We still knew, kids. It's only been like 3 weeks.
It's like when you go to camp and you're like, these bitches are my best friends.
My right or die.
We've been through it. And then you guys go home and you're like, oh, it's 2 years later.
Yes. Fantastic. Yeah, so this is the end of our spring arc, which means we are going to be moving into summer. And I will say summer is going to be... Yeah, this was good. Spring was really about setting up. We haven't really seen the wilds, you know, that world of the campaign guide. I feel like we've got a real good sense of the fae and the fucking struggles and the different types of fae that we have going on here. So we're going to be spending a lot more time in the mortal realm for summer as things get hot and heavy because it's summer. So I'm excited.
Whistler gonna find us.
Well, and who knows what's gonna happen with that book, man. I don't even know.
I will lose sleep over it.
Out of sight, out of mind, baby.
Yeah. Not my problem.
Not my chair, not my problem.
Not my book, not my problem. Exactly. Cool. Felix, cool name, by the way. And we'll see. We'll see what's next in store for our heroes. Clearly, there's some issues we got to work out, so that's going to be good. But before we go, I just like to say, you know, again, yeah, thank you for being here. If you are watching, please do make sure to subscribe, like, do the thing, recommend the video. If you're listening, please do consider leaving, you know, some stars, leaving us a rating and review. Your word of mouth is the primary way, pretty much the only way we grow the show. So by telling people that you're here, that you love it, that's the best way to grow our audience. So thank you. Make sure to follow us on social media everywhere, at Venture Maidens, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Do the thing. If you want, you can join our Discord server, which is a very lovely, wholesome place to be. It is open to everyone. We have a lot of cool channels where we talk about not only spoilers about this episode or, you know, campaign. We have, like, D&D corner stuff. We also have a grid of, like, you know, pet photos and cooking stuff and crafting and all that beautiful, wholesome shit. So we'd love to see you in there if you want to stop on by.
And of course, if you really like the show, we always do appreciate if you would consider donating to us on Patreon. Patreon is a really great website where you can support the creators you love by donating monthly. It is our number one and only source of income. So those of you who choose to donate, even as little as $1 a month, it really makes a huge difference for us being able to continue creating this content and doing cool stuff like making campaign guides and such. So thank you. Yeah, we always like to take some time at the end of our show to thank our donors at the highest tiers. So our $25 and up donors. Thank you so much, Cody Becker at Cody Rolls Horror on Twitter.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the One on Drury Lane.
Thank you so much, Nissa McKinnon.
Thank you, Richie113 from our Discord server.
And our Pharaoh's Drinking Mate tier. Thank you, Chris.
Big shout out to Markali.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Fable.
Thank you, Tony, my homie.
Thank you, Sheepish Gnome.
Thank you so much, Ben, and aka Flower Crown Gaming. I've done it. I've spent it all. I did all the feelings. I'm done now. I did the finale. Do a praise.
You did a great job.
Oh gosh, thank you all so much for being here. We are going to be back in 2 weeks with another live streamed episode, and of course you can catch our episodes everywhere in podcast form on alternating Sundays. But until next time, I have been your dungeon master, Celeste Kotowich.
Hi, I'm Katie, and I have played your drow rogue, Luveri Saf.
I'm Nassim. I played your half orc fighter, Tony Silvertail.
And I'm your trying to bridge together our friends bard, Aoife Flannery.
Ooh, mom and dad are fighting. Will we be divorced in Arc 2? I don't know. We'll see. But until then, everybody. Venture away!
Yeah. Nailed it. Good fucking job.